Okay, we're back on tape number three, and I think I started to ask you and mention where ball players mentioned their experiences or memory of their very first major league ball game, or sometimes there also have been books about the greatest thrill in baseball. But just to ask you, do you recall anything in particular about that first professional game that counted? I know you mentioned the Jimmy Fund game, but
first game that counted, we were in New York, the Yankees, and I was down in the bullpen, and we were getting shellacked. And I think I was about the third or fourth pitcher in there, about the fifth or sixth inning. And the phone rang, and I was supposed to get up and throw. And I went back there to throw, and some kid was sitting in seat number 58, way up high, and there was a great big quid. The kid tried to spit on me. I was thrown by warming up. I said, boy, this is the big leagues. So then I heard them yell down from me. And so I had to come down, and you had to step over the fence, and I had to walk into that Yankee Stadium, which is, you know, that huge, great big facade, which was a thrill. And thank God I got through the inning. I think they scored an unearned run, but I did do fairly well, and I threw well. So
That was your baptism.
That was my baptism. Was that kid spitting?
That's amazing. The Yankee Stadium obviously must have been something to pitch there. But Fenway Park too. I mean, you hit all the famous baseball parks. You know, when you go through that list. So
I was 4-0 against the Yankees for a while, and but then I think by the time my career was over, pretty much it evened out. But you know, back in those days, if you were a Yankee killer like Frank Leary was and Willard Nixon was, or you had a plus record against the Yankees, you were sort of something extra. So
oh yeah, that would have been something in and of itself just to be on the upper end of that one. What about was there anyone during your career? I'll just jump ahead a little bit on this one. Any one batter that you feared the most when you had to pitch against him?
No, for a while it was Harry Suitcase Simpson.
he played with the Indians, if I recall.
Yeah, he did, and he played with the Kansas City.
Right.
And he had hit a long home run against me when I was my first year, and so it seems like somebody can go 6 for 7 against you and hit singles, and you don't even remember him. But if he hits one long home run, you remember that exactly. So then eventually he went with the Yankees. And I don't know if the Yankees got him to, so that, because I was having some success against the Yankees, but he was for a while he was the toughest, and I finally learned a little bit on how to get him out, and at the end he wasn't so bad. And Vic Wirtz was also a toughie.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But those two guys would just sort of stand out.
What about somebody like you've mentioned that you had some luck with Mantle, but that, you know, maybe later on he got you a couple times too.
Yeah.
What about Mantle or any of the famous players?
I used to be able to get Bear out, and Mantle was about, you know, I think he ended up hitting a couple home runs, but I think I got him out more than my share. And Maris hit me. He got me for a home run that cost me a game one time. But in the year, he hit 61 home runs. So I'm number 28 on that list. So I still get little notes from fans that I signed Dave Sisler number 28.
Is that right? Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. So.
Okay, now, so at this point, you're in 1956. You've made that team. You actually win 9 and lose 8. So, and your pitching coach again was Ferris at that point.
Dave Ferris.
Okay. Then we go to 1957, and by then you're pretty solid with them. Were you?
Let me tell you one more story that was interesting in '56. Is that the last game of the season? I was 8-8, and we were playing a season-ending series in New York City. And meanwhile, I had met a girl in Boston that I was marrying, and on October the 6th, I was scheduled to go to Boston and get married.
Uh-huh.
So we had gifts and stuff, so I had a car that I loaded up with wedding gifts, It was a new Pontiac, and I drove the thing. I got permission to drive the thing to Yankee Stadium on the Thursday before that weekend series. And I just drove to Yankee Stadium, and I started circling Yankee Stadium. Then I went out a block and circled, and I finally, about one block out, I found a service station that was there. And I went to the service station, and I said, "Yeah, I'm with the Red Sox. I'd like to leave my car here until Sunday. And because after the game on Sunday, I'd like to pick up the car and then head out to Missouri where I have to take these, where I have to go." I didn't tell him there's anything in the car.
Right.
And so, and it was full of wedding gifts. And he said, "Sure, just park it right over there." He said, "I can't be responsible for it, but you put it right over there." So I put it right over there and took a taxi down to the hotel downtown. And then on the last game of the season, they told me I was pitching. So I pitched, I think it was 10 innings against the Yankees and won 3-2 or something. That was my ninth win. And I got out and put my baseball stuff in a bag, got out and walked a block and a half down to the service station, and there was the car. Just you couldn't believe it. I mean, you never do that these days, but it was fine. Put my stuff in the car, got in the car, went across the George Washington Bridge, drove to Missouri. I spent the night on a highway in Ohio. I slept in the car, drove in the next day, unloaded the car, went out to the airport, got back in the thing, and flew to Boston and got married.
Oh my gosh! And now,
that's when things are going right for you.
And you, this is your wife, Janet?
Yes, right.
Okay, and you guys have been married ever since,
right.
So that was a very good day and a good decision.
Right.
Now, while I'm talking about your marriage, did you have any children then?
Yes, I had we had a son in the next year,
mm-hmm.
in 57, named David.
Okay.
He grew up a good man. He graduated from Duke University.
Huh?
And then he went, and then his grandfather had died at this point, but he was the only one that followed Dad to the University of Michigan.
I see.
Got his law degree there, and he's now in Dallas, and he's a lawyer.
Oh, that's terrific.
And he's doing well.
That's great.
So,
only child, or?
Yeah, we just
okay.
had one.
Very good.
But,
That's what I was, too.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's wonderful. So now, let's see, at this point then you're married and you're going to spring training, I guess. I'm up to 1957.
Right.
Was that again in Sarasota? Or?
It was in Sarasota.
Okay, and Higgins was still the manager?
Higgins was still the manager and Boo Ferris was still the pitching coach.
Okay. My records show that you your Red Sox team moved up that year to third place.
Mm-hmm.
And an 82-72 record, so right about the same record, but moved up a little bit in the standings. Do you recall anything specifically about that particular year? Or I know you had
at that point, I was pretty much going to be a starter, and so I did start some games, and I started off pretty well. I think I was 7-2 at one point, and then for some reason I got a sore arm, and I ruined it. I pitched in a game against somebody, I pitched in that same Jimmy Fund game, but it was against the Braves.
Mm-hmm.
And they just used this, and then I was out for about 3 weeks, and this thing just didn't come around. And I didn't throw the ball as well that second year as I did the first year, and that was supposed to be my big breakthrough year, and so that was not a good, particularly good year for me.
If I looking at your record, you ended up 7-8, I think, for the year.
Right.
But you're out of the 22 games, which was significantly less number of games, probably because of your arm. But you did start 19 of those 22 games.
Right.
So
I was no longer a relief pitcher.
Right.
I was just unless once I was in the doghouse, I was mopping up or something. But I was I should have been on the. I hurt my arm a little bit, but I can't really blame it on that. I just did not have a good year.
The following year, then 1958, you were also still in Boston,
mm-hmm.
Still with the Red Sox. I'm trying to find that. Here it is. Anything specifically you recall? Again, Higgins was the manager. Was Ferris still there?
Ferris still the pitching coach. And I think I was 8 and 9. I'm not sure. Or 7 and 8 or something. What? One difference there.
Yes, 8 and 9. Yeah. Again, basically a starter.
Right.
I've got you starting 25 out of the 30 games you appeared in.
Right. Still, you know, by this point, you know, I probably walked too many people, you know, by that time, you've been around the league a few times, and people know what you're going to throw them pretty much, so I was just a 50-50 pitcher. I had some good games and some bad games. I had a near no hitter in Cleveland. The first game of a doubleheader in a twilight game, and I had a no hitter going into the eighth inning, and gave up a hit after one, and one was out in the eighth inning, and then we got a run in the top of the ninth, and it held up, and I won the game, but I had lost the no hitter, and that was the closest I ever came to that.
And that must have been some thrill even to get that close.
Oh, it was. It was. It was just.
Is that old saying superstition true that nobody talks to you about the game when they
pretty
think
much
you?
So, pretty much so, because they don't talk to you anyway while you're pitching.
Right, they pretty much leave you alone in the dugout when you come back.
Yeah, because usually they're sitting down where the manager is and the pitching coach is. There's usually a spot down there that the pitcher sits. The rest of the pitchers are all up at the other end.
How'd you get along with Higgins?
Oh, very well. He gave me every shot in the world. Mm-hmm. He really, and I don't know if it was tied to his first time he saw me or whatever, but he knew. But you know, he finally, and I think he just finally said, you know, this guy, he's not gonna be. The Red Sox was an organization. They always wanted to be above average. And a 50-50 pitcher, even though you're putting in some innings and stuff and having some decent games, they want better than that. And so, you know, I didn't. No one came to me on the fourth year and said, "Look, unless you do well here, you're out of here."
That's what I was going to add. Did you have much contact with either Joe Cronin or Tom Yawkey during your time?
I never met Yawkey in my life.
You never met him?
My first year, I was asked to give a speech at, quote, the country club, which I think he's a member of. I don't know that, but I went out there and gave a speech, a dumb little speech. I never was much of a speech orator, but But I'd never met the man in my life. Cronin and I knew a little bit, but he was a toughie. He was, you know, he didn't. My first year, I was making $6,000 as a first-year player, and I won 9 games. But of course, he called me in before I'd won the 9. I think I'd only won the 8. And he said, "Well," he said, "you stuck around here for the year." He says, "We appreciate that." And he said, "Here's a $1,000 bonus." So he gave me 7. So that made me 7, and he sent me a contract for $7,500, I think, which I signed the second year, which is dumb to do, but I did. My dad never wanted me to be much of an arguer or a problem, so I signed a second contract. So, you know, I didn't, you know, outside of the $40,000 bonus I got, you know, the Red Sox were pretty tough on salaries, so.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Yeah.
Just while we're on it, what would you estimate was your top salary while you were in professional baseball?
Well, my last year in baseball was I had a good year, my fourth year, which raised me from 11 to 15, and then I went to 16. I think I went to 16.5 maybe, or then I went to 7. My top was 17,000.
Oh, okay,
and. And that year, I played in the minor leagues.
I see.
I played out San Diego because the Reds sent me down to the minors. So,
okay. Well, yeah, I want to cover that with you. All right. Let me ask you this then. After that 58 season, you started out in 59 with the Red Sox, and I know that at some point then you were traded.
Right.
While you were with the Red Sox, that early part of the season, tell me a little bit about that, and then, you know, what happened.
Well, I always wished that somehow when you came to spring training that the manager and the pitching coach would sit down with you and say, look, this is what you're doing right, this is what you're doing wrong, this is what you should work for, and this is what you got to do, and this is how we intend to use you. Something to sort of get you on the same page with them.
Sure.
But that never did happen. It never happened at all. You just were, you know, you sort of surmised from what your year had been before and who they had picked up and who they didn't pick up, that what your job was going to be. And then, of course, a lot of that changes a little bit, but I never had any idea. I had no inclination that they were going to trade me, but boom, one Sunday, Higgins was on the phone and says, there's been a deal, and you're to go to Detroit, and which turned out to be great for me, which was fabulous for me. It really shook me up a little bit and got me going again. And for a while there, I was pitching real well there that fifth year, and almost made the All-Star team at the beginning of the sixth year. But
so for you, the trade was in the long run was a positive.
Oh, it was. It was very much so a positive, and I love Detroit.
Now, I've got you here being traded May 2nd with another player,
Ted Lepsio,
to the Tigers for Billy Heft.
Right.
And he was a pitcher, if I recall, as well.
He was a left-handed pitcher, right?
Right. Before we leave the Red Sox, I had one question. I was going through the rosters, and I noticed that in 59, that was the first year, if I'm correct, that Pumpsy Green played for the Red Sox. Do you remember him at all?
No, Pumpsy was always a good man that they always thought that he was sort of a popcorn hitter. You know what, didn't have much pred. He was just an average player. But Pumpsy Green, I think, was in the minor league system when I was with the Red Sox through that May. I think he came up later. I don't think he was with them the whole year, although I don't know.
Well, the reason I ask that is if my research and what I've read shows, he was the first black player with the Red Sox,
right,
to make their major league roster.
Right.
And I just wondered, you know, while you were with them, you know, how he was accepted, since that was kind of an unusual thing for the Red Sox, obviously.
Okay.
By then, baseball had been integrated for years, but Red Sox were a little bit late on that.
I never knew of any prejudice on the Red Sox, unless it was at the signing level, where they who they gave bonuses to and who they didn't.
Uh-huh.
The Red Sox as a team would rather find 10 players and have sign them at whatever price it took than to pick up 100 players and go through 100 and end up with five of those. I mean, they didn't. Brooklyn and Pittsburgh was a team that, you know, signed a whole lot of players and then let them all go out there and play, and then the best ones came to the top. The Red Sox tried to pick off the top ones from the start and give them a little better deal coming in.
I see.
That was sort of a thing going on,
mm-hmm.
But I never saw any prejudice, nor did I see the Red Sox bother anybody else who had black players. In fact, the people who had some black players had some great ones. I mean, the Yankees had Elston Howard, and they had, there were several others. That big guy from Kansas City, Vic Power.
Oh, sure, and, the first baseman.
I mean, there were some more. But the National League as a league had more black players.
Yes.
Being over in the American League, it just it was never an issue.
Okay. Well, and as far as you saw, Pumpsy was accepted and taken in as another player.
I'm sure
you weren't there that long that year, obviously,
right,
since you left in early May. Now, when you got over to the Tigers, who was your manager with the Tigers?
The manager of the Tigers was Jimmy Dykes.
Okay.
And it was just Jimmy Dykes and then Gordon, because Dykes got they traded managers while I was there. And the pitching coach was a fellow named Willis Hudlin.
Uh-huh.
And Willis really tried to work with me, and by God, he helped me.
Was that Hudlin?
Yeah, he was.
Okay.
He really helped me, and helped me with my motion, and got me going good. And I had a good year there in 1950. And then the darn club had brought up a whole bunch of guys that were sort of top AAA players.
Uh-huh.
And the team at the end of 1960, they decided to get rid of about eight of them. So on the last day of the season, or very shortly thereafter, they got rid of those eight guys. And then, sure enough, in the middle of November, there comes the announcement that there's going to be an American League expansion. And for that expansion, you have to expose so many people on a list, and those players had to have been there August 1st. Well, all these guys that they just had gotten rid of for nothing, they couldn't put on that list because they had gotten rid of them. So suddenly, the area of exposure got a hell of a lot bigger, and they could protect only about 15, where a lot of other people could protect almost up to 22 or something like that.
Oh, I see.
So I got caught in that rap, and I got sent to Washington, and looking back on it right now, I should have told him right then I've had it, because I had a good job in St. Louis, and I that job turned into a multi-million-dollar job, by the way.
No one
ever has written about.
I want to get into that a little bit before we get done. But
okay.
All right. Well, I understand what you're saying. So you went. You got to the Tigers. The information I had was that was managed both that year by Bill Norman and then Jimmy Dykes. Was Dykes already managing?
No,
when you
Norman.
Got there?
Norman was the first manager there, and he started off, and the Tigers had a whole lot of problems, and they're deep in the way down in the standings. And Norman got fired, and Dykes got hired.
So Norman was there when you first arrived?
No, he wasn't there.
Okay, Dykes was there. Well, anyway, they finished the season in fourth, it says here, and just a little bit under 500. Again, that was a team with some interesting
ball players.
Yeah,
we had good players.
And you had Harvey Keene and Al Kaline for
right.
just a couple, and as far as hitters and fielders
mm-hmm.
were concerned. And gee whiz, you know, you go through
Cash
the list.
And Bowling and Yost. And
yes.
Red Wilson and Charlie Maxwell. And
and then on the pitching staff, Jim Bunning.
Right, great pitcher.
Frank Larry, Don Mossy. So
right.
The famous
Paul
Mossy.
Kwiatek.
Yeah, Narleski. By then, Mossy looked like he was a starter rather than a reliever. But
and Hank Aguirre?
Hank Aguirre, yeah. So
he was a reliever, and it turned out in 1960 he was a reliever and I was a reliever. He was right, and I was right, and he was left, and we both had good years. And
that's what I was going to say. 1960 was really your best year, wasn't it?
Well, at that point, my ERA was right around 2 the whole year.
Yeah.
And
2.48, it says.
Well,
here.
I got there at the very end, and it was under 2 for a long, long time. And but again, the way they used that pitching staff with those four big starters, they didn't use a whole lot of people coming in the eighth inning to bail them out. They just go with them.
and you were actually relieving full time with Detroit both years, weren't you?
Yeah. Well, once I left Boston, I was relieving all the time.
Right. So then you had already gotten into that a little bit about the expansion draft, and you went to the Washington Senators in that.
Right.
And like you said, you kind of wish you'd stopped right there. But tell me a little bit about the. The center must have been pretty crazy
well,
going with an expansion
team. Well, it was a miserable ballpark,
team.
And they had a new owner, and they tried to do things, and they had a nice guy managing named Mickey Vernon, but we held up pretty much for about half a year, and then we sort of blew it, and we sort of sunk, and at the time of the end of the year, I think we were in last place or close to
yeah,
it.
Yeah, finished ninth, 61-100 was the record.
Yeah,
and he played in the old Griffith Stadium.
Yeah, they used to paint the infield green to make it look green from the stands rather than put in new sod or anything. It was a miserable place, and Washington was okay, but when the word came at the end of the year, And this was a hell of a deal. It was tied back to my Detroit days when I got went back to Cincinnati. That was Bill DeWitt, who had been over at Detroit and had lost me in the draft, and then he had gone over to Cincinnati as their general manager.
Oh, my.
So
he obviously remembered you and got you back.
He did get me back, and he gave up Paul Austin to get me.
That's what I was going to ask. Claude Austin was the was in that trade.
He was a player to be named, I think.
Player to be named later, yeah. And you went over, actually...
I think it was money on top of Paul Austin.
You went over in 61, it seems like...
Paul Austin was in the minors at that point.
I see. So you went you were traded right after the end of the season,
And then Austin went to Washington, pitched a couple of years, and then went to the Dodgers, and then turned out to be the great pitcher.
Yeah, I remember him with the Dodgers. Yeah. I was living out in California.
Right.
So at that point, you finished with the Washington. You're over in Cincinnati for Bill DeWitt. Now, who was the manager there in Cincinnati?
Fred Hutchinson.
Okay. Now, was your brother Dick?
He
coaching?
Was a coach.
That's what I thought, yeah, because at some point he actually managed over there, too.
Right.
So what were the Reds like at that point?
The Reds were a good group, a much more aggressive group, much more of a college kind of team than these guys over at Boston, which were, you know, sort of their own professionals. They were the high-class people that just came and did their thing by themselves and no high fives, a lot more team spirit and camaraderie. Frank Robinson was a great leader. He was a big, tough guy that hit the ball well, and he was well respected and ran hard. And it was a lot more of a team camaraderie that was going on there.
Uh huh. And they had a pretty good record there too. Won 98 games, if I'm reading this thing right.
Yeah, we were. We were close the whole way, but didn't quite have it to win again. They were here before, and I had gotten there, and they had a pretty good part starting pitching, and they had Brosnan was one of their relievers, and they had a bunch of good players.
I was going to say, pitching wise, they had Jim O'Toole, it looks like, and the older version of Joe Nuxall.
And, well, Nuxall was down in the bullpen with me and Klipstein, and
yes, Johnny Klipstein.
Yeah.
Mo Drabowski was on that team.
Yeah, Mo was down here.
quite a lot of.
I'll tell you a funny story about Mo Drabowski. You might like. I had gotten to know Mo, I forget where in the hell I know. Anyway, we were playing in Kansas City once, and Kansas City were one of the first person that put phones in the where the pitchers warm up in the bullpens. And up at that time, the coaches would just signal out there somehow with hand signals as to who was supposed to get up and who was not supposed to get up and throw.
Uh-huh.
So now they put phones down there. Well, the Kansas City phones was a pretty elaborate phone with all kinds of buttons on it and everything, and pretty soon one of the buttons rang in the Kansas City bullpen.
Uh-huh.
So we got to a pretty tight part of the game, and Dabrowski at the somehow shipped over there, and he was pitching for Kansas City, and so I got on the phone and rang the Kansas City right at a tense point of the game. Rang the Kansas City bullpen and said, "Get Drabowski up." he got up and started to throw, and pretty soon I saw the old pitching coach from the dugout get out there and say, "Mo, sit down.
Oh my gosh.
But that was we used to have a lot of fun with Mo. He was a nice, nice guy.
Yeah. Well, that's I know there's plenty of stories there, but so, okay, at that point then, you are, I got you here with a record of 4-3 for that team in 35 games, so you're still pitching along at a pretty good clip. And
I was on the mound when I think we ended up third that year or second. I think it was third.
And then you weren't back with them the next year, so tell me what happened there.
Well, I went to spring training. And I had a new contract for $17,000. I had 4-3, and I'd pitched fairly well. And then they hadn't done a whole lot to beef up their bullpen or do anything. There really hadn't been any significant trades. So I was I made the mistake early in my career of trying to throw too hard too early in spring training, and coming up north, I had a sore arm or not really a great foot. So I was trying to get, you sort of nurse my arm along to get come up to the, you know, so that I would be throwing hard at just before we came north. Well, when I got there, and this is again why no one told me that I didn't fit in their plans, or if I didn't, then I was going to be totally different. I was going to throw as hard as I could down there,
sure,
so someone else would pick me up. So I was just sort of coasting along there, thinking I was in great shape. And my brother came walking down by the stands out towards the Cincinnati bullpen, and he motioned to me to come in, and I went inside to the locker room, and he said, "Well, I got bad news for you." He said, "They're sending you out." And I said, "Oh, geez, am I going to the Mets?" Because the Mets were in the doldrums at that time. And
uh-huh.
He said, "No, you're going to the minors."
Uh-oh.
And Dick was the one that told me that. And he said, "Bill DeWitt wants to talk to you at the end of the day." And so I went up to DeWitt, and he said, "Well, we can't find a place for you." So he said, I got a place I could sell you to Houston." He said, "But they're going to send you to the minors." He said, "If you're going to the minors, you might as well stay with us and pitch out in San Diego." So I said, that was just like a bolt of lightning.
Sure.
And my initial reaction was to quit, but, you know, I've just gone through spring training. I'm ready to go now, and boom. This is the last day of spring training, I think. So I went home and told my wife, who was packed, ready to drive to Cincinnati.